Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Hi, I'm Scott Hahn, and I'd like to invite you personally to join me and Breadbox Media on August 24th in New Oxford, Pennsylvania, for a day of spiritual renewal. I'll be presenting three talks, one on St. Joseph, one on the sacrament of matrimony, and another one on the Holy Eucharist. Learn more and register at breadboxmedia.com/PA conference. I hope to see you there.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Hey, how are you? Sherry Brownrigg here in for Cy Kellett. And so happy to be with you. It's a Monday, the start of your week, and we've got another great show. Is there ever not a good show on Catholic Answers Live? Well, as what I call myself, the stunt host, I would have to say never. There is never not a good show. Trent, wait, I just had a double negative there, didn't I?
You did. So I think that would mean there is... always a good show.
I hope so. I hope my English teacher from grade school is not listening, because if she is, I am in big trouble.
Well, you know, anyway. Actually, I took a English grammar boot camp not too long ago, and double negatives are something that can be used in informal speech and other forms of writing to make an emphasis on a point. Like when the bad guy says, "I ain't telling you nothing." We get the point of what he's saying, and it's not really that incorrect.
Good. Exonerated. Thank you. I appreciate that. I feel like I just went to confession. It's that kind of feeling, Trent, so thank you.
Well, some people think that bad grammar is almost a kind of sin, and they shouldn't be too worried.
Well, it's like that T-shirt, which I love, is "Let's eat, Grandma," with the comma between "eat" and "grandma," or "Let's eat, Grandma," no comma.
Oh, yes, the commas, and especially the Oxford comma, can lead people into strange and bewildering sentences.
Indeed, indeed. Well, now you know who our guest is today, and really I should be the guest since you're here more often than I am, Trent. But so many of our listeners know Trent. He's a staff apologist here at Catholic Answers Live, the author of a bazillion, that is a real number, bazillion books. He speaks, and he does a lot of interviews, he writes. And really, you're kind of, you know, the go-to guy here at Catholic Answers Live, and we're really blessed to have you on today because the topic is, why are you not religious? Why are you not religious? So, you know, I was thinking about this, Trent, and a couple of years ago, I read a very interesting article. It was in Wired magazine, and I was in doctor's office or something like that, and it predicted that big data would eventually replace God as the big thing in our life, the thing that we go to, that we rely on, that we believe in. I was really kind of stunned by that. I can see actually how it might be going to that, but I don't know. What do you think? Big data? That's, you know, really, it's a big part of what we are doing today, kind of governs our lives.
Yeah, I think that first we should give credit to where credit is due in the application and accumulation of knowledge that we have in the world today. We do have an unprecedented amount of knowledge at our disposal, as well as easy ways to be able to access it, which was really unheard of even 10 or 20 years ago. I mean, you and I can get on a computer right now and learn things that would have taken us weeks to track down in the libraries before. I know my father-in-law works at NASA, and he was telling me about how the Apollo moon missions had less computing power than your own cell phone in your own hand right now.
Phenomenal.
So we've really made great strides there, and that's a good thing. The problem is when we put an inordinate amount of attention and veneration to the accumulation of knowledge, especially in the realm of technology. People are very fascinated by science and the natural sciences, as they should be. But I think most people value science because of its application to technology, or the ability to create devices or algorithms or create things that help us to lead our lives, at least more efficiently, to remove hazards in our lives. But even still, you have people who have all kinds of data at their disposal. I mean, they have all kinds of choices when it comes to finding romantic matches online or to learn about things on the internet. We have all this data in front of us, but we have an unprecedented number of lonely people, of empty people, that even in the midst of this gluttony of information that we have, many people still feel unfulfilled or even worthless or just not seeing a value in life at all. And I think that's where religion and understanding that we're not merely material creatures in this universe provides an answer that no amount of quote-unquote big data can provide us.
Yeah. You know, and I really believe that's true. And this article went one step further, too, with all the different things that we have at our disposal. Alexa, all the listening devices that we have that help us, that give us instant answers. We've got on our phone, essentially, we can ask, okay, where is this, or how do I get to this? And in 2 seconds, we've got our answer. And it really predicted that this kind of relationship that we have with the data that comes into our lives, we're going to really start to depend on that and see it as something that's indispensable, where at one point in our lives, humans thought that God was indispensable. You and I still think that way, and I know many of our listeners do as well. But it's interesting how the devices that are created to help us are actually, well, could possibly be leading us away from God.
Well, they also lead us away from other good things as well. I mean, I myself have a mild addiction, possibly even more so than that, to my own cellular phone. And many other people feel the same way. Mm-hmm. That technology can take advantage of these very primal instincts that we have, very primal instincts forged when we were ancient human beings, however many thousands of years ago, to forage and find, you know, berries and, you know, little treats and things like that. Those instincts were fine when resources were scarce, but now that we have this digital gluttony before us, we can become obsessed with seeing what other people think on the internet, trying to rack up social media likes. So they can lead us away, not just from relationship with God, but you have lots of people that social media and technology leads them away from relationships with other real living human beings, that they find virtual relationships more satisfying, but in the end, they really aren't.
Digital gluttony. The best phrase uttered today. I love it. Digital gluttony. Writing that down.
Right.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the phones here, see if we can get one call in before we head to our break. And the number, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Why are you not religious? Maybe you call yourself spiritual, or maybe you don't believe at all. Maybe you have big data as your religion, or something else other than the Christian religion. Why are you not religions? Why are you not religious? 888-318-7884. We've got Nate. He's in Dallas, and he's watching on YouTube Live. Hello, Nate. Good to see you. And why are you not religious?
Hi. Thanks. Good afternoon.
Hi.
I guess that I'm not religious because, in my experience, religions all seem to be sharing a couple of features, like unfalsifiability, or an inability to concretely prove the existence of their deities, or they all seem a little bit like mysticism to me.
Okay. What do you mean by mysticism? I kind of see you're coming on the other 2 points. What do you mean by mysticism?
Well, so let's say that they have rituals that seem like pagan or Harry Potter-ish. You have to be close to something in order to affect something. Like, their religion operates on the inverse square principle, like radiation. If their religion were true, it would seem that distance wouldn't be a factor.
Let me jump in, Nate. I'm still not entirely following. You said they have pagan rituals, and it resembles Harry Potter. Now, on those 2 points, religions, both Christian religion and other religions, have rituals And even in the Christian religion, there are elements that have been adapted from pagan rituals, but baptized and put to good purpose. I think just because something has a ritual doesn't mean it's bad. I mean, it was a pagan ritual to share rings to honor the sacrament of marriage, for example. I have one on my hand right now, but that doesn't mean that that's a bad thing. I mean, there are secular rituals all the time related to birthdays, related to deaths. Ritual in itself, I don't think, is a bad thing. Now, you said Harry Potter, are you saying that religion is just some kind of nonsensical magic? Or I didn't quite get that part.
I guess it's the use of keywords, like your religion needs you to say a certain thing in a certain way with a certain inflection in a certain time, with the addition of some certain enchanted amulet or object that seems to give me that magical feeling.
Alrighty. Well, let me address that. First, I'll agree with you that there are some religions and belief systems that practice magic. Magic would be, to define it broadly, the ability, the attempt to modify reality through the inherent power of incantations or objects, so such as using crystals or amulets or even particular spells, recitations of certain words, and that the power to modify reality is found within those very words or those very objects. And there's non-religious and religious belief systems that hold to magic. But I would say the Christian belief system does not hold to magic. Rather, what we hold is that in order to carry out religious observances, for them to be valid, they have to follow, for example, a proper form. For baptism to be valid, it has to be done in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. It's not the words themselves that affect anything. It's God affecting change in reality, spiritual reality, like regenerating our souls through the words that we say. And I don't think that that's strictly a religious idea. So, for example, in order for secular marriages to be valid, you have to utter some kind of a vow in the presence of even a justice of the peace, like, I take you so-and-so to be my wife, or I pledge to marry you so-and-so. You still have to follow a certain set of words for something to be valid in the eyes of the state. In Catholicism, it's the same thing. You have to follow a certain form in order for a thing like a sacrament to be valid in the eyes of God and the church. So I don't think that it's a nonsensical thing. Do you see the parallel I'm making there?
I guess so. With baptism, that's a very good point. You know, some baptisms are invalid, and then the Catholic Church worries about double baptizing somebody, and then they have conditional baptism for right. Stillborns. And then it just seems like God knows who is and who isn't baptized, and if he cares about the wording or if he cares about, you know, invalid baptisms or baptizing a stillborn infant is not, you know, the circumstantial one, the conditional baptisms.
Yes.
Why do we need to concern ourselves with all that?
Well, do you think God wants us to do certain things in order to follow him? Like, God could do everything for us, but then we would just end up being puppets on strings. So do you think that God wants us to freely do some things to respond to him?
Yeah, I think that would be a reasonable expectation that we should do what we can if he asks it. But what we're doing is, seems to be bending over backwards with this. Were you baptized or not? You need to investigate this. You need to, you know, really look into it and make sure that we're not baptizing you a second time.
Well, it's important.
Why does there need to be conditional?
Why does there need to be conditional baptism? Well, because the Catholic Church teaches that baptism is what takes away original sin and incorporates you into the body of Christ. So it's very important that it occurs and that we know that it's done validly. Now, in the course of human affairs, you can have people who are baptized, they claim to have been baptized, but we're not sure whether that situation was valid or not. And so here we just err on the side of caution and maybe, you know, do a conditional baptism. So I think that your objection is, well, God knows the difference. And I think part of it is we don't know the difference. So for us to proceed and have everything to follow and function properly, God has given us a magisterium. He hasn't given us just a book. He's given us a church to help us to live out life, knowing that we have these principles, but applying them in a lot of different circumstances as life becomes so complex, the church gives us leeway and helpful guidance in some of these more unusual circumstances. So if you are wondering more about these kinds of issues, I would definitely point you to our website at catholic.com. And I'm glad you called in.
Thanks, Nate. We appreciate that call. And that leaves room for you at 888-318-7884. And you can always find information at catholic.com. There's always a lot there that answer your question. Just type it in the search bar and you are bound to find it. All right, we are up against the first break, but we'll be right back. Trent Horn has more. And again, we're asking the question today, why aren't you religious? Here's the number, 888-318-7884. We'll be right back.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live is proudly supported by CatholicChemistry.com, a new dating site for Catholics who want to do dating right and believe relationships start with Catholic chemistry. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicChemistry.com for their generous support on the web at CatholicChemistry.com.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
Every single day, I get to help our listeners of the Sunrise Morning Show wake up, find out what's going on in the church and the world, and then walk with them as we all seek to grow in knowledge and love of Jesus Christ and the Catholic faith. I mean, how could it get any better?
The Sunrise Morning Show with Anna Mitchell and Matt Swaim. Tomorrow morning, 6 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Sherry Brownrigg, sitting in for Cy Kellett today. And we are talking with Trent Horn, and we're asking you the question, why aren't you religious? Here's the number again, 888-318-7884. And, you know, I love the podcast that you have, Trent, the Council of Trent. And whoever came up with that is a marketing genius, by the way. As someone who is in marketing, that's one of those where you say, gosh, I wish I'd thought of that.
Yes, I've even seen non-Catholics and non-Christians, at the very least, begrudgingly commend the podcast for having a good title, a catchy title like that, and one that works on two different levels.
Well, we've got that going for us, right? But seriously, it's a great podcast. And what's coming up soon?
Well, I just did some episodes. If you'd like to learn more about the podcast, definitely visit trenthornpodcast.com. Mm-hmm. I did an episode on a recent Pew Forum survey saying that 70% of people who identify as Catholic do not believe in the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist. So I talk about that and give some tips for how we can share the doctrine of the real presence with other people. I just did an episode that's going to go up tomorrow about the Democratic Socialists of America and about my new book, Why Catholics Can't Be Socialists. So I'll be talking about that. And people who are patrons who support the podcast at trenthornpodcast.com get access to bonus content like a sneak peek of a chapter from my upcoming book on socialism.
Wow. Okay, well, that's at trenthornpodcast.com, trenthornpodcast.com. You can find out more. You can get the podcast. You can also get it on catholic.com, but go ahead and go there to trenthornpodcast.com. Well, we've got Carolyn on the line now. Carolyn, you are on the air, and the question we are posing you is, why aren't you religious?
Hello. The reason I feel that I struggle with being religious is because I had an abortion 20 years ago, went to confession, but I've heard that that my child, because they were not baptized, they're in some kind of a limbo state, and I just feel horrible about that because it's not my child's fault that I made a horrible decision. I regret it.
Yeah.
I've repented from it. But I still feel like maybe I'm just going to go straight to purgatory, that there's no hope for me because of it. And then I feel even worse that my child, and I'm being told my child is never going to go to heaven. They're just going to be in some limbo state. They may not be suffering, but I'm thinking, can I have my child baptized by desire? Because it's not their fault.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. First, Carolyn, thank you for calling in, and I'm very sorry to hear about the loss of your child from that decision that you made. And I'm grateful that you availed yourself the sacrament of confession to be healed from that. And even if, when our souls are healed spiritually from sin, we can still feel the woundedness from that many, many years on, even for the rest of our lives. Before we continue, are you listening on like a radio or a computer monitor? I just want to make sure we don't have an echo or anything like that. So you might want to...
Oh, no, I'm not listening. Nothing's on.
Oh, okay. Well, that's just me then. First, the teaching of the church that of limbo was a speculation of theologians for a long time in the history of the church, that it's very clear that God gave us the sacrament of baptism, that this was the means to free us from original sin, to incorporate us into the body of Christ. 1 Peter 3:21 makes it very clear that baptism now saves you. John 3:5, Jesus says you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven without being born of water and spirit. Now, that being said, just because baptism is the ordinary means for us to be saved, it doesn't mean that God is incapable of saving people apart from baptism. Paragraph 1257 of the Catechism makes it clear that salvation is bound to the sacraments, but God is not bound in a similar way. He can give his grace to anybody at any time in any way. And we have hope and confidence in him, knowing, as 1 Timothy 2:4 says, that God desires the salvation of all people. He wants every single person to be saved. And the only reason that somebody would not be saved is because that person willingly chose to reject God's gift of salvation. God will not penalize someone just because they were born in the wrong place. They never had access to baptism. Maybe they were born in a place where they never heard of Jesus. Or maybe in the case of your child and other children who have died before birth, they just never had an opportunity to be baptized. God will not penalize them because, as you said, because of something that they didn't choose. So in fact, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, which is the part of the Magisterium, the official teaching office of the Catholic Church, released a document in 2007 that affirms this long-standing view in the church that the babies who are born without baptism, we can hope in their salvation. We don't have like 100% guarantee that God has told us, yes, these children are saved, because God didn't explicitly tell us that, but we can infer a hope for their salvation because we know that God is merciful and that many parents pray for their children. I mean, my wife and I have experienced two miscarriages, and we pray and we appeal to God's mercy on behalf of our children who we were not able to baptize. But given that, what I would say, like at least for me and my wife, we have hope that our children who were lost will be in heaven. But how sad would it be if she and I gave into despair and we turned away from God, and through our own actions, we did not go to heaven to be reunited with our children. So that's why I would encourage you, Carolyn, that if you say you're not religious now, I would very much hope you would return to being in full communion with the church, because it sounds like you're Catholic. You went to confession, right?
Yes. Yes. But okay, so I just wanted to ask one thing about that. So you're saying, what if somebody is, let's say, Muslim or Jewish and never accept Jesus Christ? I thought the only way through salvation is through Jesus Christ.
It is. Acts 4:12 says that there is no other name on heaven or earth through which that we are saved. We are all, and John 14:6, Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. So you remember how Jesus says he is the door, or he is the gate. We have to pass through right. Jesus, that Jesus brings us to the Father. Now, here's the thing. Just because we are objectively saved by Jesus, it does not follow that that in order to be saved, you must subjectively know that. So, for example, I could say, the only thing that will save you from a snake bite is anti-venom. Like I say, that's true. The only thing that will save you from this snake bite is anti-venom. But a little child who gets anti-venom administered to him, he may not know what anti-venom is or venom is. He just may know that someone has given him something, or he received something, a medicine that will make him whole, that will heal him. Much the same way the Catholic Church teaches that it is possible, not necessarily probable or guaranteed, but it is possible that anyone who follows the truth through what has been given to them and is a person of goodwill and seeks after what is true and what is good can be saved, that God will judge people based on the revelation he's given them. If we look in Romans chapter 2, for example, Romans 2, 14 through 15, St. Paul says that there were Gentiles or non-Jews who never knew about the law of Moses, didn't know about the Ten Commandments, but they would still be judged based on the law God gave them written on their hearts. So you could have people who either never knew Jesus, or the gospel they heard was really distorted or inaccurate or presented by hypocritical or evil Christians. And so God will judge them based on what was given to them. And he'll judge other people like you or me who were given the fullness of truth. We know the Catholic Church was given to us for our salvation. We'll be judged with a higher standard. And so because we've been given more, like we've been given confession, the Eucharist, God will say, I gave you so much. This Muslim man in Saudi Arabia or Afghanistan, where it was illegal for people to preach the gospel to him, but he heard the name of Jesus once, and he's come to know me, and he's willing to risk his life to know me. What about you and me? He'll say to me, Trent, I gave you daily mass. What did you do with that? And I'll say, well, Lord, have mercy on me. So that's why I would say that God will judge people based on what they're given, especially people like you or me who've been given so much, will be judged more. And that's why we always have to turn ourselves over to the mercy of God and hope upon that in our own judgment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess they used to teach that the only way that salvation was through Jesus, and specifically to the Catholic Church. Did that used to be the teaching of the church?
That was the teaching for people who knew about that the Catholic Church is the way of salvation. So if you know that the Catholic Church is God's plan for your salvation and you choose to reject it, then you can't find salvation apart from that. But if you don't know, if you have invincible ignorance, if you don't know that, it's through no fault of your own, then you wouldn't be judged under that same standard. So if you like, I would like you to stay on the line because we're going to have to go to a break here soon. Give you the call screener your name and email, and I'll send you some more information on this that may be helpful. So stay on the line, give the call screener your email.
I'll send
you more info.
Well, thanks so much, Carolyn. That's a tough one. We so appreciate you calling in to talk to us about it. All right, there's room for you on the line, 888-318-7884. The question today is, why aren't you religious? And Trent Horn wants to talk to you. We'll be right back here on Catholic.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Jesus asked his disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" Turns out that today, as back then, this question has a lot of different answers. So many groups want to appropriate Jesus, tweaking his identity until he looks and sounds just like one of them. But then you no longer have the Lord, says apologist Trent Horn. You have an imposter. In his new groundbreaking book, Counterfeit Christ, Trent exposes 18 phony versions of Jesus that we encounter today, helping you to recognize the fakes when you see them, explain why they're phony, and make a case for the full truth and beauty of who Jesus is, the Christ, the Son of the living God. Order your copy of Counterfeit Christ today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Looking for an on-fire Catholic speaker for your event? Catholic Answers speakers will inform and inspire your audience to grow in their Catholic faith. For more information on booking a Catholic Answers speaker, visit CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com today.
Love and beauty. As a little girl, Dawn Eden Goldstein knew that she wanted those things, that in them somehow she would find God. Over the years as a rock journalist, she moved among some of popular music's best-known artists, straining to capture that transcendent love and beauty in every note and lyric. In Sunday Will Never Be the Same, Dawn recounts her spiritual journey in beautifully wrought detail, mixing powerful accounts of trauma, healing, and epiphany with funny anecdotes from inside the music scene. It is the rare conversion story that delights as it inspires, amuses as it edifies, and ultimately lays before the reader a lived testimony to the transforming grace of Christ. Order your copy of Sunday Will Never Be the Same by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders. What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic? Let's talk about it on Call to Communion tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Let's share with Brown Hogan for Psychologists, and it's another great show here at Catholic Answers Live. The question we're asking today is, why aren't you religious? And the number to call, 888-318-7884. We would love to talk to you. And just a footnote here, Trent, I didn't have time to say this before we would be unceremoniously cut off before the break, but
right.
Carolyn was our last caller, and beautiful call. She talked about that she really kind of fell away from her faith after she had an abortion, and she went to confession, but she really fell away from the faith, just thinking that you know, there was no hope for her,
right,
and no hope for her child. But Carolyn, if you're still listening, I do want to mention a resource that is a beautiful, beautiful way to come back to the faith and to really, really kind of unpack all this. Rather than just showing up at the door of your nearest parish, which you can do, and which the priest will be happy to see you. But think about Rachel's Vineyard. Rachel's Vineyard is a beautiful resource here in the church that helps to bring people back, and it will get you in touch with all of this and provide a very beautiful pathway to come back to the church. And I've had several friends of mine who have gone to retreats through Rachel's Vineyard, and several of them who actually give these retreats, and it's just beautiful, absolutely incredible. So Carolyn, I hope you're listening, and take advantage of that. Again, just Google Rachel's Vineyard. So have you had any experience with them, Trent?
Yes, I have. I've been actually had the privilege to be able to attend as an observer a Rachel's Vineyard retreat through the permission of those who were present, because they're confidential and anonymous, but everyone on the retreat agreed for me to be a part of it. And it's a wonderful healing experience for people who have had an abortion or been involved in an abortion decision. And it's very freeing for people who feel with this particular sin, and understandably so, weighed down with guilt, feeling that they can never have any self-worth again after what they've done. And so anyone who is struggling with an past abortion or past involvement in an abortion decision, I would definitely recommend reaching out to Rachel's Vineyard, and I'll be emailing Carolyn about that after the show when I send her some more resources on what we talked about.
Oh, beautiful. Well, Carolyn, you've come to the right place, and so glad that you called today. And next we have Anonymous on the line. Hello, Anonymous. Why are you not religious?
Hi, everybody. This is Anonymous here. I'm not religious for multiple reasons. One of them, a big one for me, is that the concept of worship is, to me, is an immoral teaching. That's one of them. Another one is that religion teaches, it primes a community to be needing a dear leader to save them, because religion teaches people that just being human is fundamentally broken, and nothing they can do is ever going to be that because of their nature, so therefore they need a dear leader to come save them from ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also immoral. And also churches and religions tend to guard a church unity over crimes against humanity as well. Those are just some examples.
All right, Anonymous, let me go through each one of those and see what you mean by that. First, you said that the concept of worship is immoral, and I'm not sure what you mean by that. To me, worship means to give someone their worth's ship. So do you believe that we should give respect and honor to people?
Yes, I do, but I don't equate that to worship.
Okay, well, do you think
you're
that some people...
You're equating that to worship. You haven't asked me what I think worship is.
Sure.
Yet.
What do you think worship is?
The way I see people actively practicing the concept of worship, regardless of the dictionary definition of it, is that the entity that they're worshiping, they are no longer assessing that relationship morally. They are giving it a free-reign pass to allow it to do whatever it wants to do in that relationship, and there's nothing that it could do that would ever make them break that relationship with that entity. That is immoral. Okay. You have to be morally assessing the relationship, and if it becomes bad, you should have the moral standing to walk away from it.
Okay, so Anonymous...
I don't see religious people being able to do that.
Well, Anonymous, it sounds like what you're talking about are religious disorders or deformations of religion. And I would agree with you that anything that is good among human beings can be deformed. Like, we can have healthy marriages and toxic, abusive marriages, right?
Yes, of course.
Sure.
But I'm talking about this entity, and according to the biblical text, the Syntyche, is one of the worst literary characters ever written.
Okay, well, we'll get to that in a second, but it would seem to me that if there is a being that is all-knowing, all-powerful, made the universe, and is perfectly good, the embodiment of what the good itself is. Like, do you believe good and evil are objective things? Like, there's things that are good and things that are evil?
I believe good and evil are just descriptive terms in reference to a neutral point. That's all. I don't think that it's an entity. It's like saying there's an entity out there of the concept of digestion. No, good and evil are moral assessments.
They're
not an actual thing.
Okay, well, things can be good or evil. People can be good or evil.
After they've been assessed by a moral agent.
Okay, so you yourself have assessed like the God of the Bible to be evil. So, but if there were a being that was perfectly morally good, all powerful, made the universe, and desires are good, what kind of relationship should we have with this being?
The relationship should be assessed by both parties, regardless of the power of the being involved.
Okay, what if they're
perfect? Otherwise, you're just having a Stockholm Syndrome relationship.
Anonymous, let's say the being is perfectly morally good. Then don't we owe this...
If you assess it to be that way, then you think you're in a good relationship. I've assessed it to be, like, according to people that think the deity is a morally good statement or entity, then fine, that's your freedom fighter. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's a terrorist.
Okay. Anonymous, I want to stick with just a hypothetical here, because you seem like you want to just veer away from that. Because I'm trying to see that if it is possible, because I think that you might have if you tarnish the entire concept of worship by saying there are some people who worship God in a distorted or abusive way and use it to justify evil. Well, there are parents and spouses who take parenthood and marriage and use those as pretenses to abuse others. But that wouldn't fall, just because there are abusive spouses or abusive parents, it would not follow that there aren't proper realms of respect we ought to give parents, proper orders of respect we ought to give spouses, and the same is true for God. So if there is a perfectly morally good God, ought we not give this being who made us gratitude and follow this being's commands if God is perfectly good?
No.
Why not?
Because it has to earn that. It's not granted that just because of its existence.
Does he have to earn it from you? Does he have to earn it from you?
Yes.
Why should a being that is perfectly good, infinitely smarter than you, earn anything from you? What do you have to offer this being that it doesn't have?
I have to offer my relationship with him that apparently it's wanting, and it has to earn that every single day. Just like every single day I have to earn the right to be with the person that I love. Every single day they have to assert to me, I still value this relationship with you because you have not abused the relationship, regardless of my power, regardless of my financial influence and power over them.
Okay. So if God creates the world and then he offers to us every day the means to free us from the sins that make us do evil and bad things, why wouldn't he satisfy that criteria? Whereas we're the ones who don't earn his respect. We could never earn God's respect, because we always do evil things. Every day we make some mistake or we hurt people. It sounds like we're the ones that are in trouble here, not God.
Because I reject its assertions of what is good and bad.
Okay, so you agree that there are objective standards of good and evil. It's not just your opinion?
That's a different conversation of a different phone call, and that's take too much to dive into. I don't know if there are objective good and bad. I think that once you pick a subjective reference point, you can have objective good and bad assessments once you've picked your subjective reference point.
Well, it seems to me that if you're saying God isn't worthy of your time, you're using, if it's just your opinion, just like, you know, if it's just your opinion, that doesn't seem to be a good foundation for rejecting what is true and good and beautiful in God. I just, I guess for me, why do you seem to have this animosity towards God that's prejudicing the discussion, that if you just met a human being that was...
Because I think it's a terrorist.
Why is God a terrorist?
Okay, we all know, according to the literature of the text about the character of this entity, that it, to me, is one of the worst entities that's ever been written in all of the literature.
Why is that?
Why?
Yeah, you just want...
Okay.
Just give me one reason.
Let's see. Sure. Let's see here. It slaughtered the entire world in a flood.
Okay, so God kills people. You think that's wrong?
Yes.
Okay. Let me ask you this, Anonymous. Suppose I gave you $20 today, and I gave you $20 every day for the next month or so. You never asked for it. Would that make you happy?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you there, because I was still making the point that you seem like you're trying to defend a murderer.
Okay, my point is
someone that committed genocide.
Well, what's funny to me is you're not willing to say that it's a fact that that's wrong. Otherwise, it's just your opinion. You think that it's wrong, and then we've just got a battle of opinions.
You think that it's genocide is an opinion to hold that that's a wrong thing?
You think it's a fact that it's wrong? I do think it's a fact that it's wrong as well.
I have assessed that genocide is wrong, and I don't think anybody that doesn't believe that that's wrong is a morally serious person.
Okay, well, Anonymous, here's my thing. If God gives us life, is he obligated to give us a set amount of it?
Okay, if you have a child, are you obligated to give that child more than 6 years of life? Do you have the right to go blow its brains out at 5 years old?
I don't, because I haven't given a child life in the same way that God has given life to the universe and all of us within it. So my point is this. I was using an example, and I just want you to comment on it. If I give you money every single day, and then one day I stop giving you money, have I wronged you?
That's not the same situation as you're implying that. I don't agree with those. That example relates to what we're talking about here.
Once
you give life to a sentient individual, you don't own the person that you've created there. You can be a steward of them, but you don't own them. Right. I understand that owning people as that way is a foreign concept to the Abrahamic religions.
Why doesn't God have
to own people and have power over them?
Who
That's
says?
Immoral.
Who says?
I do.
Oh, so you make all the rules.
I have to live by the responsibilities of how I morally assess something, and I take that ownership. If I get it wrong, then I need to adjust. Mm-hmm. But I don't see, again, this comes back to the idea of worship. Is there nothing, if there's no barbarism your deity could do that would ever make you think that it's a terrible entity? Seriously?
No, absolutely. If God commanded me to do something that is intrinsically evil, that is evil in and of itself, if God... I'm going to finish, and then we'll have to go to our mm-hmm. break here, because we've run up against the third break of the hour. If God commanded me to violate his moral law, to do something that is intrinsically evil, I would say that God never uttered that command, because God can't command me to break his own law, for example. Now, what I will say, though, it's interesting that on the one hand, you hold the position, you're willing to say that God has violated some kind of moral standard that has weight, that's beyond your opinion. But if that's the case, I would ask, where does this moral standard come from? If there is a moral standard that says that certain acts are always wrong, no matter of time, place, or culture, then it would follow that there's a moral standard that transcends time, place, and culture. And since morality is a property of persons, it would naturally follow that this standard must be one that flows from a person, a morally good person, that transcends time, place, and culture. So to me, these arguments that try to say God is wrong actually show that God is the foundation of morality, and he does exist. So I would definitely commend you to check out my book, Answering Atheism, where I go into 3 chapters of this in detail, and I think that might be helpful for you. And I thank you for calling.
Thank you so much, Anonymous. We do appreciate that call. And keep listening, too, to Catholic Answers Live. The book that Trent mentioned is a great resource, also Catholic.com. All right. As he mentioned, we are up against the break, but I do want to give this phone number to you because Trent is actually going to be with us next hour as well. And the question will remain the same. Why aren't you religious? So we want to get those calls queued up. 888-318-7884, and we'll be right back with more with Trent Horn here on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live with Trent Horn is coming right back.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Check out EWTN's official YouTube channel.
Just follow the link on our homepage at EWTN.com or go to YouTube.com/EWTN.
Watch EWTN's live shows or today's homily from the Daily Mass.
Click the upload button to see our most recent clips.
You can also find all of EWTN YouTube content by clicking the playlist button.
It's all on the official EWTN YouTube channel at YouTube.com/EWTN.
Visit today.
Go forth and preach the good news. It's not just a suggestion. If you want to take more seriously the command of Jesus to share the gospel with those around you, consider joining St. Paul Street Evangelization. It's a grassroots organization that brings the Catholic faith to the streets in a non-confrontational way. Visit our website, www.streetevangelization.com, to learn more. And don't forget to like us on Facebook. It's time to do our part.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Sherry Brownrigg in for Cy Kellett, about 15 minutes before the top of the hour, here for our last segment on Catholic Answers Live. But Trent Horn will be with us next hour as well, and we'll continue to ask that question, why aren't you religious? And the number is 888-318-7884. I'm not sure if you know this about Trent, but he was raised by a Jewish father and an ex-Catholic mother. And that kind of set him adrift in skepticism in his teenage years. He really thought religion was a crutch for the simple-minded. At the time, Trent thought that Christians were anti-intellectual, that they were just a bunch of ignorant Bible thumpers. And Trent particularly enjoyed refuting creationists and people who questioned evolution. But now Trent shares the story of his conversion to the Catholic faith and how God turned him dramatically around. It's in a new 2-CD set called Following the Evidence. Trent will share how he went from a skeptic in high school to becoming a devout defender of the faith. And if you would like to get a free copy of Trent's new CD, and I know you're going to want to do that, visit Catholic.com and click on the Following the Evidence banner. So that's at Catholic.com. Click on the Following the Evidence banner, and you'll get a free copy of Trent's new CD. And it's called Following the Evidence. And Trent, that's pretty interesting. Jewish father and an ex-Catholic mother. That had a great influence on you, didn't it?
Yeah, I think everything providentially came into place for me to be exposed to the faith. And I really wasn't exposed to Catholicism until high school. So in my conversion story, I talk about where I went from being a skeptic to embracing the truth of the Catholic faith, even while I was about 17 years old. And I think it's a good pattern for others to follow and to help show the faith is reasonable. So I think this is a good story for people to listen to refer to help build up their own faith, and maybe something useful if they know someone who really believes in following the evidence itself and they're not very religious. They might find my story to be helpful also.
You know, it's kind of amazing to think that you actually discovered the faith at 17. When I was 17, well, we're not going to talk about what I was doing, but let's put it this way. I wasn't thinking about religion. Mostly, I think I was thinking about boys, but anyway.
Well, I had other high school distractions, but I cared a lot about truth. I was a budding young philosopher, and so yeah. I wanted to have answers to deep questions, and I was grateful for the people that introduced me to those answers, and I've shown my CD set how we ought to introduce those answers to other people as well. And in the second CD, I talk about what happened after my conversion up to becoming an apologist here at Catholic Answers.
Wow. Well, that's really a great story. And again, if you want to get that, go to Catholic.com and click on the Following the Evidence banner. So we've got some phone lines open. Here's the number again, if you would like to fill them, 888-318-7884. And the question we're asking today is, why aren't you religious? And so far, we've had really interesting calls, Trent. We've had a lady who had an abortion and was told when she went to confession that her child would be in limbo, and she really felt, well, it's not the child's fault, and she also felt that she was so far away. Trent talked to her. We had a caller who, that's just the last one, talked about the position of religion really being immoral. Worship was immoral, and that God was a terrorist. I found that really interesting to think of God that way.
Yes, I've met many people, and this caller sounds like a very committed atheist. His rhetoric reminded me of the kind of rhetoric I heard from Dan Barker in our debate at Minnesota State University. I think it was last year we had that debate. It's available at Catholic.com or at our YouTube channel. And there, we were Dan and I were debating. Dan was a former pastor, became an atheist like 30 years ago, and he's been preaching the good news of atheism ever since. And we were debating the question, does the Christian God exist? And Dan just threw every single Bible verse in the kitchen sink at me to try to make God look like a bad person. And that rhetoric I heard from that caller reminded me a lot of what Dan argued. What I found interesting with that caller, I wanted to get into more with him, but we didn't really have time. Was this kind of prejudice that if you knew a human being who is perfectly moral and did miracles and was all-knowing, like seemed to have no limit to their knowledge, I would think that you would tremble in their presence. And just, you know, we fawn over celebrities when we see them. And these people, the only, you know, some of them are just famous or being famous. You would think that with a human being that was superbly good, that we would, you know, kind of tremble in their presence or be awestruck, that how we should respond to God, who would be infinitely beyond any such human being. It would just seem clear that at the very least, if there were a God, we could debate whether God exists, sure. But if he did exist and he's perfectly good and all powerful, shouldn't we give that same kind of awe and worship to him instead of making ourselves the standard of all that is good and right in the world? It's just a very odd belief indeed.
Yeah, it is really interesting too. And it also makes me think about how a lot of people will hold up singers or stars. And I've actually heard the phrase the Church of Beyonce before. And, you know, I don't get it.
Is that an offshoot of the Church of Oprah? Or
must be.
A schism maybe?
A schismatic church.
Yeah.
Well, but you know, when they think about someone who is being, that they love so much, they think is so awesome, that they would actually hold that person, a mere mortal, up to the standard that by which we would hold a God. You know, I guess that's somewhat of the ancient worship, but we're seeing it so much today.
It's always been throughout history. Romans chapter 1, St. Paul talks about the foolishness of Gentiles who, one, honored creatures, idols, instead of the God that made everything, that there are things you can just know from reason alone. The two examples Paul picks is knowing that we should worship God, not creatures, and that sex is for the union of men and women. It's not for unions with two men or two women. That's two things he makes very clear in Romans chapter 1, for example, and that looking at like idolatry, we live in a world today that's turned that topsy-turvy, that God is the one who gets the third degree from us, and sexuality is not really a big deal. Whereas I think that if we look at the way the world really is, as Pope Leo XIII, the phrase that he used, see the world the way it really is, we see it points to something infinitely beyond it, and that gives us a better trajectory in our lives to know how we should live and how we should understand that which is true, good, and beautiful.
Right, yeah. Well, we've got only a few minutes here, but here's an off-air question that came from Melanie. I think we've got time to get to it. How can we respond to someone who doesn't like religion because they can't understand or accept tithing? And the quote that that Melanie posed, that she's probably hearing these questions, why should we pay God? Why does he need us to pay him?
Well, it's a good question, Melanie. I would say that God does not need us to pay him. 2 Corinthians 9, 6-7, St. Paul makes it clear that God desires a cheerful giver. When we give our money, it should be done out of a spirit of generosity. That's why, at least within Christianity, there is no mandatory tithing. There's no mandatory percentage of your income that you have to give to the church or anything like that. However, a precept of the church is that we are morally obligated to support the church that God gave us. God gave us sacraments through priests. He gave us the Eucharist, confession. And so he gave us the priesthood so that we could receive these sacraments. He gave us liturgy to worship together. And so we should provide for the needs of the church. I mean, if I go to a movie theater, I know I'm not going to be able to sit there for 90 minutes for free. I'm going to pay something to keep the lights on and the reels running. If I care about God and I want to be just towards what God has given me, a church where I can worship and receive the sacraments, at the very least, I will offer him my own financial resources, what I can, without driving myself to destitution, to provide for that. So I would say that there's no mandatory giving that's required in Christianity or in the Catholic Church. However, we're morally obligated to support the church that God gave us. And that would just seem to make sense. Deuteronomy 6:5, the Shema says, "Love the Lord your Israel, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, and with all your strength." And actually, that Hebrew word for strength in Deuteronomy 6:5 usually refers, in one sense, to material possessions. So if you were an ancient Israelite, your strength was your money, your herds of goat, the money that you had. So if we love God with our heart and our mind, shouldn't we love him with our material possessions and use them to support his church and also to help the least among us by giving to charity and helping those who are less fortunate? So I hope that's a helpful answer to you, Melanie. And thanks for watching us, and hope everyone else watching will tune in for the second hour as well.
That's going to be a great second hour. We've got some folks who are queuing up right now, but again, still room for you. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. And think about this question: why aren't you religious? And Trent Horn will be asking that. Got room for your call right now. By the way, coming up tomorrow, it's an open forum with Tim Staples. I hope you will tune in for that one as well. The number to call right now to get on the show, 888-318-7884. I'm Sherry Brownrigg in for Cy Kellett, and I'll be back with Trent Horn and Why Aren't You Religious? Your calls coming up next here on Catholic Answers Live. Stay with us.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tours Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.